Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And we are committing the next hour and, 50 minutes to the Lifford Stranraer electoral area. This is our 10th local election debate, our 15th in total if you count the European debates. And we're delighted to welcome into studio a number of guests. And rather than me give their names now, in the process of introducing them, I'll allow them to introduce themselves. So, Dakota Nick Menamum of Sinn Féin, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us. And tell us a little bit about yourself or why people should vote for you in a minute or so.
Thanks, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. It's Misha Dakota Nick Fanman. I am a 25-year-old mother of one from Balbofey, and I'm a fluent Irish speaker. I am asking people to vote for me if they want change. I am a new, young female voice. This is something that I believe is missing in our area. I understand issues facing both families and my generation. Issues such as the high cost of living, housing crisis and the loss of our young people to emigration. I firmly believe that this generation needs strong representation in Donegal County Council. Sinn Féin are the only party, I believe, who can deliver change, and that change starts here at local level. So on the 7th of June, I am asking everyone to come out and to vote for me and to vote for change, Dakota Nick Fanman.
All right, stay tuned for more from Dakota. We're also going to hear now from Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, Martin Harley of Fine Gael. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning, listeners. I've been 15 years a councillor now in the Lifford Stranraer electoral area, 34 years in business in the Twin Towns. Had the experience of working with executive when in the council. I feel that's important going forward because there's a lot of projects that will be important with the regeneration of the Twin Towns, with the bypass coming in the next few years, expected to be delivered, the final delivery from the government in the next even few months, with the final with the drawdown then from the TIA. There's a lot of housing. The council at a local level, we have been involved in buying a lot of land up at a local level over the last number of years for social housing into the next 5 years. So I want to be part of all that into the next 5 years. And I feel that with being the only sitting councillor living in the Twin Towns, I feel that my voice is needed in the next council.
And if you continue to tap that mic, Martin, I'm going to confiscate your chain. So see how you feel about that. Patrick McGowan of Fianna Fáil, good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig. my name is Patrick McGowan. I have been elected in 1999. I must say I've enjoyed my time in the council. I've gained great experience. I'm a full-time councillor, and generally what I do is I work with community groups. I probably would have helped establish most of the community groups in the area that serve, from Castlefin, Convey, Glenfinnan, Balbofey. I'm still a member of a lot of them groups, both chair and secretary. So as I say, I've gained a lot of knowledge over the years. I've helped deliver on a lot of projects. I'm very aware of the problems that's out there and the needs of the area. I'm very aware of all the bureaucracy and the problems it is trying to link up projects, how to get them started, how to get them up and going and deliver and even draw down money. I know there's a lot of talk out there for change. My thing would be not change for change's sake, change for the better. And I believe with my experience and track record of delivering and working hard for the area, having my feet on the ground, canvassing door to door, and I do that every 5 years as well as in between the elections, and I think I will make a good councillor going forward for this area.
Martin Scanlon from Clohan running as an independent. Good morning to you, Martin.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. I'm Martin Scanlon. I'm from Stragelly, Clohan, as in the parish of Glenfinn. I'm married to Belinda and we have four children, twins, Caitlin and Clodagh, aged 11, Darcy, aged 9, and Dara, aged 6. I'm self-employed contractor in the forestry industry, employing 5 full-time staff and also a part-time farmer. I'm currently on the board of management for our local national school, Scoil Náisiún Tuath an Cumann. I'm an active member in the community and I've personally supported local groups such as Our Mothers and Others and our local Glenfinnan teams. I'm a passionate supporter of rural Ireland and I firmly believe that rural areas such as Glenfinnan and the surrounding areas could do much better with proper investment. My priorities from day one have been for an improvement in infrastructure such as our roads, public water supply, broadband and transport. I believe I have something to offer to my local community and Donegal County Council, and it is that basis that I'm putting my name forward as in this election, as a strong, independent voice for the benefit of the entire area, and that's why I'm asking you for your number one vote on June the 7th.
Right, Martin, thanks very much indeed. And Gary Doherty now, Sinn Féin. Good morning to you, Gary.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to my fellow candidates and your listeners. I live in Castlefin with my wife, Louise, and children, Dara, Aoife and Connor. I graduated from the University of Ulster with a BA Honours in Irish History and Politics, and I've been a community and political activist my entire adult life, working and volunteering with community and sporting groups in my area, and being involved with Sinn Féin for almost 25 years now at this stage. I was co-opted onto Donegal County Council back in November 2013, and I can honestly say that it has been the honour of my life to have represented the people of the Lifford-Stranorder area for the last 10 and a half years. During my time in the council, I've done everything that I could to try and promote not only the Lifford-Stranorder area, but Donegal as a whole, to lobby government officials and departments, and to represent you, the listeners, to the best of my ability. I've spoken in front of Oireachtas committees and met with ministers to highlight issues including flooding or transport infrastructure, including the A5 and 10T routes, and I've represented Donegal in the European Parliament in Brussels to highlight cross-border health initiatives and improvements to our mobile phone network and the broadband infrastructure. Like Martin, I've been a board member of Donegal ETB since 2014, and I was elected to the board of ETBI, which is the national representation body of ETB schools and further education centres, in 2019. I'm the current chair of the Council's Climate Action Committee, and I sit alongside Councillor McGowan and the newly founded Northwest Energy Agency, and I'm hoping to become a part of a strong Sinn Féin team in Lifford alongside Dakota and Tony McDeed for this area.
All right, thank you very much for that, and I appreciate each respecting each other's time to speak. Over the course of the next while, though, you can indicate if you wish to come in and make a point. It is a debate after all. Dakota, if I can start with you, and we're going to get into the nitty-gritties of issues, but I suppose more generally speaking, you know, I'd speak to an awful lot of young people representing, say, for instance, the Donegal Youth Council, you know, and they're full of ideas and full of ambition and full of desire to influence change. And then you do look at the council, and, you know, with all due respect, older people can represent the views of young people as well. But there is that gap, right? So we've got these young, ambitious people, and then there seems to be a gap where there's people that have been there for a long time or maybe are a little bit older. Do you think you're the person to bridge that gap so that maybe the younger person feels, you know, more represented if you see it, you can be it type of thing?
Yeah, I definitely do. So I have the experience that I'm young, but I also have the experience of having a one-year-old daughter. So I understand kind of the struggles that families are facing. I understand my generation's issues of housing. That's kind of the big one for us. Like, we can't afford no houses. We can't afford to rent, build, buy, any of that. And I know a lot of the sitting councillors, like, they've had their homes for years and they just can't understand how frustrating it is for our generation to not be able to get a home and be secure with your family.
And what is it like amongst your peer group in terms of getting out of the, you know, the parents' house, if you're lucky enough to have access to that, getting into your own space? I think for a lot of people, building, they probably don't even try and pursue that anymore, but rental has become an absolute nightmare now.
Yeah, so it's all just a nightmare. Like, I know I have a brother, like, he was denied planning permission for a house, and then, like, his mortgage and stuff, like, he was getting trouble there too, like, and he's well into his 30s, like, so there's still lame issues no matter what age you are. But a lot of my generation, they're all emigrating now. So I have another friend who's just booked her flights to Australia this summer, and I have nurses that are friends, they're all gone to Australia.
Yeah, and I'm not picking on you, Patrick McGowan, of Fianna Fáil, but, you know, I mean, Dakota makes a good point there, doesn't she, in that, you know, a lot of the people currently in the council, they have their own homes. They've gone through those battles. It was much easier, as opposed to acquire or build property back in the day. Would you agree the council does need, you know, fresh perspective?
Look, we probably always, over the years, we probably go through recessions and various stages and that. Like, when I built my house, It was hard to get a mortgage. People didn't get mortgages then. You had to tip your cap gun into a bank manager. It was who you were and so on. And it was very, very difficult. That's where the government at that time brought in loans and so on. And through, and probably over the last 20, 30 years, that has been going up and down. And yes, we're in the middle of a housing crisis now at the moment. But there is a lot of work ongoing. Like we come out of a serious recession. And then no sooner than that, then we're into... a lot of the buildings stopped, and then you had into COVID and you had one thing or another. The council, particularly in this area, we're probably one of the better municipal districts for building houses. The amount of houses that we have coming that are actually being built right now and that will be built in the next 2 years would nearly wipe our housing list out. I know there's other issues in bigger areas.
Yeah, but those are people the on numbers, a social waiting list. What about people who aren't on that want to get on the property ladder?
Remember this as well. Every time someone gets a council house, they're freeing up another dwelling. I know some people are living in mobile homes and that. So if we build a couple of hundred houses now, that's freeing up houses. And remember, this is all about the market. The reason the prices are high at the moment because there's a limited number of availability. When the council starts building social houses, people move out of all the estates that we have, say in Val Buffet, Blue Cedars, Lonsdale, them houses are going to be free up. And then the market is driving, it has always driven. We're open to market and economy. We have to be because we sell 80% of everything we've done. But get back
so you
to
believe
that.
This resolves itself then?
No,
in
no.
Time?
It's been in cycles. This has always happened and always will. There's been other years in doing it. And like, you know, when I have my house, like we all councillors will have families and brothers and sisters. We have all children and grandchildren, exact same position. So, you know, we're not aloft to it. Like, I wouldn't like to think that just because you're a certain age, you don't know what it's like not to have a house, like, or because you have family and friends. So we are very aware. We're working. We're lobbying. We lobby within the council. We try to get over the problems that are there. There are a lot of restraints. Yes, there's a big demand upon social houses in towns. Most of the planning at the moment is for the countryside. There's maybe 60% of the applications we have, and I can tell you over the last 25 years I could count in one hand the amount of people that come to me whose planner were turned down. Normally planners turn down because it's bad vision lines and issues they get, or the site is not suitable. But generally, you know, it is difficult. But I know in my hand, I could actually count on one hand, you know, it's getting the right site. And stuff
that doesn't tell the full
easy.
Story because you could have planners come onto site and tell you that you're not getting a planning, and that wouldn't actually, you know, to say that it's not favourable to planning, and that wouldn't be counted in.
Well, if you look
in,
at the figures, you have to go back to the figures. So okay. If you look at the amount of planning that's been granted and the rural countryside at the moment, and that's despite a big push coming from Dublin and other places not to have people living in rural Ireland, but we very much... All of the council, we very much support building houses in the rural countryside where you're providing most of the infrastructure yourself. So we are doing that. The government, on the other hand, is providing sites, zone and land and money for council and social. The problem at the moment is obviously that it's not profitable for builders to be building, and that's something we need to tackle.
Okay, Martin Scanlon, obviously we all have views on housing. Yours is exacerbated by the fact that we can never escape from it, and why should we whilst people are suffering. You live in a house that is affected by defective concrete. So, you know, I mean, obviously, you've a nuanced perspective of housing from a number of different directions.
Yeah, well, my own house, which I purchased in 2017 and just realised then shortly after that it is affected by the defective rocks. The only scheme that seems to be is going to work is 100% redress. Like, fully support the people's document, and it has to be adhered to. In regards of housing, we're going to end up in a situation where we're going to have people that have rental properties maybe not been redressed. Maybe 10 years down the road, we're going to end up a large number of houses not being fixed, which is only going to add to the housing crisis. So that has to be addressed. And the people's document is the way forward, and that is my belief.
Yeah, indeed. I'm sure, Martin Harley, you're well aware of the issue of housing and the, you know, affordable housing too. You know, we have this situation whereby we have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of properties, not all houses, but properties available for short-term lets, and then you look for somewhere to rent where people can move in and start to build a life, and all of a sudden, you know, there's nothing there,
yeah,
or very little there.
Well, see, in my 15 years in the council, this is the first time that our last meeting as a local area last week, there's four houses council houses available that are just being done up. They'll be ready for letting in the next, say...
So you're saying the council housing stock is at full capacity once those four are brought into... I mean, that's a sign of efficiency, I suppose.
It is a sign of...
At the same time, it points to a lack.
Of efficiency, because probably the first six, seven, 8 years of being in the council, most meetings when you went to, there was always up on a minimum of 40 houses that was always and out for... that people had left and were getting... the houses were being done up. And that was the way it was. In fairness, probably our housing executive have done fantastic work over the last number of years to get that back out again. Suppose getting back to the original question that you asked Dakota was about young people getting housing. I have a young family as well that are getting on the market now as well. And I do see the challenges. And I remember when we bought our first home back in 1990. It seemed like, I think it was 34,000. And I thought to myself, will I ever get this paid for? And it seemed massive at the time. And I thought to myself, mind, there's a house that was something like 32,000 at the time. And we says, well, chance this other one to get 34. And we thought, we're never going to see this paid for. And that was the way it was back then. So, and that time as well, interest rates that time, I remember, was 15.5%, I think, was the first interest rates I paid. And then I remember buying my business.
But if you look at the price of that house at 34K compared to what you were earning at that time, and you bring that up to 2024, that gap has narrowed greatly.
I was, my wage that time was about 160 or 170 euro, 170 punts per week. Like, so it was still a massive chunk out of your wages. But then I remember 3 years later, interest rates went up to over 18% because we had bought our own business at that stage in 1993. And interest rates, like, imagine if interest rates now were at 18%, the whole country would be crippled. But I feel the things have been put in place that has left it now to better. And the problem as well is...
I think people would say, with all due respect, I think people would say the housing market is crippled at the moment.
Oh, yeah. See, part of the problem as well is after the crash of 2008, 2009, there was 240,000 people in work in the construction sector at that stage. That went down to 90,000 around 2011. We're back up at again at 190,000 in that construction sector. So we're still 50,000 people short. And this is something that we need to be looking at. And instead of people saying, Candice scouting about people coming into the country, I think we should be looking at that as a benefit to our country, that we can be using these people to help build up the construction sector workers. So I think there's a lot of positives in that.
Gary
there, so.
Doherty, come on in there.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that we've skirted around so far, Greg, is the affordability and affordable houses. I think that's something that I've been championing for probably the last 7 or 8 years, that there's a huge cohort of people who are over the income limits for social housing, but yet they don't earn enough to qualify for a mortgage. And that's getting particularly exacerbated over the last couple of years because, as everybody knows, the housing market has gone through the roof. And you really need to be earning a huge wage in order to be able to afford some of the houses that are on the market now. And that's something that we need to change. We need to change how housing schemes are built. We need to make sure the Part 5s, which are where a percentage of each housing development that is built is set aside for affordable and social housing, because I think that's the only solution that we have that can allow these people to get onto the property ladder. There's other things such as the Croí Cónaithe grant scheme, which is a very good grant scheme in principle. The problem is that people can't get upfront funding, so they have to find the money first of all, spend the money, and then reclaim it back from the government. I think we need to change that so that people can get upfront money. And then also I think we need to expand it to a buy and renew policy for the council, where Donegal County Council can be buying up vacant properties. I'm sure everybody has been out canvassing over the last few weeks. The amount of vacant properties out there is absolutely unreal. Like, there's houses there for everybody. We just need to find a way.
What are those houses? What anecdotally, what's the breakdown of them? I mean, obviously, according to Martin, they're not council-owned houses. Are they privately owned houses that are just simply empty? Is it tourist accommodation?
I don't think we really have too much of the
tourism
holiday homes in our district
you.
And compared to some of the other ones. A lot of it would be private properties that maybe due to family issues or whatever, that they're just lying empty, or, you know, for whatever reason, people don't want to rent them out. But there's, when you are canvassing and knocking doors, you can see the amount of houses. It's
Martin Harley, do you want to come back in there?
Yeah, the figure for Donegal in the last census was 7,000 houses in Donegal alone. that are lying vacant, and that's not Aldi Homes. So that's.
But I think really what people want to hear now is how do we bring them back into use? What is the plan? Now, of course, some of this is national government stuff, some of it's local, but people are going to be voting on the answers to these questions regardless. So how do we get them back into use?
Well, the thing as well, as Gary quoted, there is getting back into the scheme. The Croí Cónaí is a great scheme, between 50 and 70,000. And if you're on the islands, it gets up on 90,000, which is fantastic.
But if those houses are lying empty for 2 years, even if they're in you know, they're decent bungalows, people can still apply for those grants. Why aren't they then?
Yeah, well, there is something like 700 have been applied for in Donegal at the moment, and as well, I was going to say there is the credit unions now have got to go ahead to give loans as well, and I think that's very important because the credit union, being a past chairperson of Balba Fáin's another credit union, I remember back 10, 12 years ago I was chair of it, and I remember that at that stage those houses were at, you could have bought houses at them for around 40,000-50,000, and I remember that time we were trying to get you're paying that for cars now, you're getting a car loan now for that kind of money, but we were trying to get people on the property ladder at the time, but then at the overall central bank stopped the credit unions that time because they felt we were encroaching on the banks market. But at least now they've seen sense. They're allowing the credit unions
The credit unions want that expanded, actually, to increase to 15% of their assets for the bigger ones. Martin, another Martin here. Martin Scanlon. I'm going to... It only takes me two goes to get it right. Go ahead, Martin.
Well, I believe that the council as a whole should be taking more of a role in building SA houses out in the country again. You know, it would... We have the land is available there, and it'll ease up houses in the towns, and it'll help populate rural areas again and make them more viable for the doctors, for the shops, keep the areas alive. Like rural Ireland's been neglected, so it is. Everyone's been forced towards towns, and it needs to be more investment put into it, including in housing.
And we're seeing that battle, aren't we, in terms of, you know, what we want from our county development plan and how that aligns to the national one. Martin's going to come in now, and then we'll have, Patrick, then we'll go back to Gary, and then I want another word from Dakota. Go ahead, Patrick.
I agree very much with Gary there, because we've all been out canvassing, and particularly in this time, I've been asking neighbours, you know, who owns that house down the road. Sometimes you like to know the house before you go to it if you don't have somebody local. But it's very apparent.
That's for a couple of reasons.
But you know, it's very apparent, all right, the amount of houses in the countryside. You could see one in three or one in four lying empty. But I particularly this time, I've been trying to get some kind of a handle on it. And the amount, even last night now, and it was a case I knew about. There's one person that I know of in the hospital, and he has control over two houses, and he's got dementia. And the family, the walls are not sorted out. This is causing an awful lot of problems.
Yeah, that'd be the exception rather than the rule, it's not.
The amount of people that are in hospital, the amount of people that have died, the amount of disputes that's gone on is absolutely serious. Because you're right, and notwithstanding you need money up front to draw down these 50,000-70,000, the amount of people that cannot get legal ownership, you have to have clear title.
Okay, all right.
That is a major issue. I would say it could be one in three of the empty houses out there. And then the other one is, yes, cash flow and that. But look, the issue at the moment is the facts speaks for themselves. We are still, because of all the lobbying and the way we have framed our county development plan, and the last county development plan that we were just after adopting, that has to go back to the plan, we were asked to reduce the amount of houses in the countryside from 25% down to 20%. We have rejected that.
Yeah, but that doesn't that can be overruled, though.
Oh, it can be overruled, but as we stand...
By your minister, Darragh O'Brien.
Well, look, he might not. Let's wait and see. We'll not jump the gun before we get there. But we have a tradition in Donegal of fighting to build houses in rural, countryside. The big issue, and I would agree, is I see within a year or two a lot of the social housing issues have been solved. That will free up private accommodation.
Yeah, you said that already.
But it doesn't deal with, as I say, the young couple or the people first time. It's getting mortgages, and some of these schemes will help to buy and so on.
Right,
but they're not everything.
Gary, come back in there. Gary Doherty.
Yeah, I think just to simplify it, when we're looking at vacant properties, there's two ways of looking at it. There's the carrot and the stick approach. We've tried the carrot approach, where we're offering the Croí Cónaí grant, which in some instances is working, but which needs reform to allow for money up front.
What's the stick?
The stick is the vacant property levy, where we anybody that has a vacant property that's lying empty.
But a third of those houses, according to Patrick, you wouldn't know who to put the levy on.
Well, you could still, the levy would have to be there on the property. The levy exists, so eventually the property would have to be sold or moved on at some stage. But like the property tax on a house, if you don't pay your property tax on a house, when you eventually come to sell it or your descendants come to sell it, they have to pay the property tax. Okay. And I think a vacant property levy.
Right, I was going
to
bring.
Gary, that I would also say that we need to bring the legal people in here. People, and I'm sure we all would agree with, the people's hands is tied.
But you will excuse my cynicism, but I would say there's probably 4 to 5 different schemes that I've done interviews about bringing derelict properties back in. One was you took photos of them yourself and uploaded them to a website. Don't know what ever happened to that. Until people see it, they're probably going to be a little bit reluctant to accept it.
Everybody would agree here, we have made great progress regarding these derelict buildings now and gone on and exactly
what Gary... everybody? Does everyone agree with
that? I'll come on now. Their grants there are fantastic.
I can't speak for everyone, Patrick.
Cash flow doing that is a problem, but as Martin says, at least the credit unions are starting to come on. The government is reacting. They know it's no point bringing a scheme out if people can't. People do want to do it. Remember, when it came out at the start, it was in towns only. They moved it out to the countryside. At the start then, you can only build it for yourself.
Now you
can build it and you can lease it. So it's the big one is cash flow. But I think the main problem is going to be affordability.
Okay, Martin, I'll come back to you. Dakota, I haven't heard from you for ages.
So just my own personal experience, I am living in a mobile home because it's the only thing I could afford, really. I was renting and the rent was just sky high. It was over $1,200 a month, which was just ridiculous.
See, the problem is, Dakota, not to cut across, you can continue your point afterwards. I mean, that your payment of that rent, although it doesn't count to your ability to pay a mortgage, it's quite frustrating because you possibly could get a mortgage for 6, 7, 8. You know, it depends on term and all that kind of stuff. So you're in a mobile now. You were paying the 12, but you certainly could pay, 7 or 8, I'm sure. Not get digging into your private finances. Yeah. You understand that. Mm-hmm. But all that money you paid for rent, it doesn't do you any benefit at all. I mean, there's something seriously wrong there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is definitely. It counts for nothing. And it's just, that money was just wasted because I just ended up on a mobile then, and I've no security now at all, with my mobile, but that's about it. I've no hopes of building. The cost of materials has gone skyrocketed and there's nothing to rent in the Balbofay or Snorlaugh area.
So when you hear someone say, it was Patrick, that, we'll build more social houses, that'll free other houses, and then you'll get out of your mobile into one of those houses. If I were you, and this is no disrespect to you, Patrick, that's there's no target, you hope it might be the case, but it's no pathway for you out of the mobile, really, is it?
No, and it's a bit too late. There's been years without any social housing building in that area. It's way too late. It's just unrealistic, to be setting out hope that, I'll have a house soon, and you just never know.
Martin, did you want to come back that's Martin. Just to make, sorry, I call people by the first names, and I want to make sure everyone at home knows who's talking. Independent Martin Scanlon.
Just to come back on to what Patrick was saying about the vacant house grant, and one of the major issues I would say is getting tradesmen to carry out this work. It's across the board, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, they're not to be got, and I think we need to put more emphasis on apprenticeships to get these people, to get these tradesmen that we need to carry out these works, and in return that there will help reduce costs if we have more labour in the market.
Yeah. Okay. Listen. Sorry, Martin. Do you want to come back in before the break there?
Yeah. Just coming on to Martin there on the apprenticeships. In fairness, the ETP have been doing fantastic work on apprenticeships, and they've put more schemes on place this year. They're getting more electricians. They're getting more plumbers out there as well. So that is important. That the ETP are working hard with this, and it's something that I've been kind of championing on the ETP board this last 13 years. Apprenticeships were so important, and it's back again to the crash of 2008-2009 that we're only coming back
that
to ourselves.
There is going to be have to come a point though where we stop blaming that.
Oh yeah, no, understand totally. But
we bailed the banks out, paid the money back, most of it. We should be moving beyond that.
Prior to 2008, we were building 60,000 houses a year in Ireland, which was at the time it was too many, and we've seen that then because we had so many
ghost estates.
So we need to be building between 30,000 and 40,000 houses a year, realistically, and that's where we need to be.
Okay. So. Greg, can you ask Martin Harley why he never goes door-to-door in the run-up to the elections? We're in the Knock area, and they've had knocks from Patrick McGowan, Martin Scanlon and others in the last few weeks. Is it that he's so sure of his seat that he feels this isn't necessary in the Knock area?
Keeping the good wine to the last.
Right, okay, so you will be up?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
indeed.
Right.
Definitely so.
Here's an interesting question. If you don't mind, could you ask those candidates what do they class as affordable housing? Dakota, can I come to you first on that, if you don't mind? Like, you know, we do talk of affordable housing, but I'm not exactly asking you to put a figure on it, but it is an interesting question.
Well, affordable has to be within your range, so Sinn Féin have committed that they will deliver affordable housing. So in year one, we have about 13,000 affordable houses and 8,000 social houses. Looking at figures, it's probably under 300,000 or so.
Yeah, and I suppose it's really what can be afforded on your average wage, isn't it?
And Donegal, obviously, it's going to be a different price to what you would be getting in Dublin, as the wages are different prices. So.
Many of you have talked about the provision of services in the area. Obviously, the situation in St. Joseph's Hospital is ever-present, what respite services available for the area, but also in terms of services for people with disabilities. CDNP, obviously, it's an ever-present problem right across the county. Gary Doherty, I'll go to you first on that. I mean, that's a broad church. You can and pick and choose from that as you see fit.
Yeah, well, I think, look, the two community hospitals are something that we've been...
That's Lifford and St. Joseph's.
Sorry, Lifford and St. Joseph's. They're something that we've been fighting for probably 15 years now at this stage, since the closure of those hospitals was announced initially. And it was only through community action that those hospitals were saved, and we still need to fight for the proper investment at those two hospitals that we need. Lifford desperately needs that new site, that new build on the greenfield site that we have secured already through Donegal County Council. We simply need the go-ahead from the Department of Health to go and build that hospital. That's absolutely imperative for Lifford, and the same for St. Joseph's. We need the same investment in St. Joseph's that we were promised back in 2016.
Why is it a constant battle, or it feels like it's a constant battle, just to retain, you know, what are basic services? And them being where they are eases pressure on LUH as well, of course.
Well, look, it's a cliche now at this stage that we're the forgotten county, but I believe it. I totally believe that we are the forgotten county. And the political will simply is not there. We've had the same government since 2011. Fine Gael have been there since 2011. They've been supported by Fianna Fáil since 2016. Ministers after minister after minister has promised that these things are going to happen, and they still haven't happened. I can't answer for that, but those ministers should be able to answer for that and why that investment hasn't been forthcoming.
Martin Scanlon, this is an issue important to you as well.
Yeah, well, St. Joseph's, I believe, is not getting proper funding. It needs to be, services need to be retained in it and brought back to it, even services that have left, like the physio. And I would be looking to get more services into it. Like, you take the likes of Dunloe, where you can have an X-ray done, get your eyes tested. You know, so simple things like that that would ease pressure on Letterkenny. And it would even restrict the stop the traffic flow to Letterkenny. Like, it's a community hospital that should be used within the community for its purpose.
Yeah, because of course that includes step down, doesn't it? I mean, people want to their non-acute care to continue to their care as close as they can to their own community.
Yeah, and the step down one will be a big one, and people that are in the community hospital and St. Joseph's, they need to be moved from that area. Like, we have people in Dunloe Hospital from Stranorlar, and people from Stranorlar going to Dunloe. Somebody needs to sit down and have a look at this and bring people back to their areas where they're from, where their own peers are, just for a social inclusion, that they can talk to people and have a way of life that they were used to.
Okay, I'll come back to you if you raise your hand if you want to add something. I suppose, Martin Harley, a lot of the problems being put at the door of Fine Gael there by Gary Doherty.
Yeah, well, I suppose, in fairness, St. Joseph's have had a lot of investment. There's, as I say, I'm on the committee of St. Joseph's this last 15 years since I went into politics. And we meet regularly. We met this week, even on Tuesday night. There again, we have a meeting now every 6 weeks that we have decided that just to keep on top of things, that we just don't meet when a crisis hits So we're having these, we get an update now every 6 weeks.
From the HSE?
Well, there's notes comes from the HSE.
Because as you would know, with the last crisis where they announced changes to the facilities available at St. Joseph's, no one found out in advance. That was just dropped on everybody.
Yeah, even the committee ourselves, we didn't even know about that. That was just announced. The media knew it before we, the local committee, knew it. So, but one of the things that I would kind of champion, I feel that should be done, and we talk about, Martin says there, about keeping people kind of close to their own area. But I feel we should be building more small units and areas that people could stay at home in their community longer. Like we have in Northern Ireland and England, we have like communities where people can move into a centre. Like you take even Martinsherry and Cloughan, near the Cloughan, the Day Centre. If you could build a couple of units, the people that could come and live there, they could stay in their community longer. So instead of pushing people into community nursing homes, that people, a lot of people, if they only got maybe 1 or 2 hours a day that people can call into them, even it's just even for the loneliness thing that people are passing.
But those services are available elsewhere. How do we get them? How do you use your position as councillors to put the pressure on, particularly if your party's in government, to say, right, enough is enough here. You know, we've got the solutions, we've got ideas, but we need the backing. Instead of you start engaging with this tangled mess that is the HSE.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, both the council there, you take the development of Thrush Road in Balbuffet that has 19 units in it. 16 of those units, they will be two-bed apartments that are fully wheelchair accessible, that are up to speed, that will be available into the future as well, and that people can live. Like, you're beside shops, you're beside the town, you're beside the churches. So that the things like that there, that's what we need to be looking at. There's only two of those projects in Ireland. One's in Dublin, one's in Donegal. Massive investment there by the council and by the government, and I feel we need to be looking at more of that. And I think this will be a test case for other parts of the county, and I would hope that we will do some more. And as well on the hospital, like the Lifford as well, as Gary said, there we're ongoing now that 20 beds of respite care and Lifford as well going forward. So we need to get that.
But when might that be delivered?
Oh no, well the site's there. I mean, it's not like they have to look. A lot of these projects have to looking for sites and takes years. It's like school campuses
trying to get. Yeah, so the site's there.
The council have agreed to give it to the HSE. We need to get the design work done now and get it on the table of the board of the HSE that say, right, this they have agreed, Dermot Monaghan, the head of HSE Estates, has agreed that this will go ahead, that Lifford will go ahead. So that's important. Plus a primary care centre near it as well. Okay. So that's very important for Lifford. A lot of investment there.
Dakota McMenamin of Sinn Féin, obviously something, this is an issue very important to you as well.
Yeah, it is. So in St. Joseph's, obviously we need the services back, so it's absolute disgrace that we have lost the services in our town. It's such a busy town, and to lose services like that, they're vital to our community. But we also need to increase the number of respite beds that we have available. We just need to make arrangements to have more. And then in terms of Lifford Hospital as well, I actually was at their AGM recently, and I'd have to say me and Tony McDade were the only election people that turned up,
either sitting or candidates.
Yeah, or candidates. Sorry, and they spoke to us about their concerns. So planning permission is the next big one for them, and they're hoping that can go as quickly as possible for them.
Yeah, Patrick McGowan.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think anybody listening in will know that the person to the fore in all of us would have been Councillor Gerry Crawford. When a lot of people were asking to hold on to the old building down in Lifford and tweak it and do this, that and other, Gerry been in, obviously, an advantage to him, been on the HSE. And he went off and they negotiated over many, many years to get a new site. He worked through all of ourselves, and we would have all supported it here in Lifford, land that the council bought. And now, as Martin says, there's 20 beds going there, and there's going to be a primary health care centre. That's a plan. When they build it, I don't know. But I know Gerry Crawford spoke to that committee that the AGM the last night before he went to it. I don't know what he was on, but he is to the fore. He is the leading advocate in person for what's planned now, and I don't think anybody should take that away from them.
I don't think anyone has.
No, but I think just be important for me just to advocate that, you know. The other thing is...
Terry Crawford, by the way, was invited to our first debate but declined the invitation.
Just on, as regards St Joseph's, Martin says I have attended more probably meetings than everybody in the county regarding St Joseph's. I've been actually in three different committees. Three times we had heard that there could be problems there as well in St Joseph's, and we met, and then the committee's disbanded. The last time now,
is it a good thing though to sort of claim that you've been at all of these meetings and yet?
Well, very important. Yeah,
is it? But we've have these constant firefights to try and just hold on. I mean, is that not a sign that maybe?
No. I think it's very important to show your commitment, even if you get into council or you're not. Remember, you don't have to be a councillor to be involved in community development. Like, you have to be there. You have to turn up, and that's very important. But just regarding St Joseph's, our last meeting, which I organised to the Minister, Charlie McConnell Logue, we got the HSE in there with Dr McCauley, with about six members from St Joseph's Committee. We went through line by line with about 2 hours there. What they've explained to us, which we questioned at the time, there is...
Did you say Charlie McConnell Logue was there?
No, I said which he organised.
Oh, he facilitated it.
Right. We were actually having difficulty, which I had asked, sent several emails, and there wasn't a response.
Okay, well, we'll talk about, I'll tell you what, hold that thought. We'll talk about what came from that meeting.
Yeah.
I know Gary Doherty wants to come back in, and I'm sure others do. So what we'll do, we'll take a break for the news, and we'll come back and dedicate as much time as necessary to this topic before we move on. We'll be back with you in about 5 or 6, 5 minutes.